Anthony Edwards is the Messiah for NBA basketball. Just put the sack on the clock. I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the top. Yo, 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 what's going on, everybody? Mike here, Sports and the Real Shit Podcast, coming at you once again. As always, I appreciate you guys joining me. YouTube, if you're watching, if you're listening, Apple Podcasts, whatever other podcast platforms you're listening on, I appreciate y'all. Hey, I've been forgetting, I feel like, the last couple episodes. Don't forget to check out the website. And if you're so inclined, check out some of the t-shirts I have on there. I designed them myself. I find them pretty funny. So if you find them funny as well, some of you may not get the joke, some of you will on the t-shirts, but check out the website, sportsandthereal.tv. Sportsandthereal.tv. Check out the website. I'd like to hear your feedback. There's more to come on there. Obviously, it's not a finished product, but I wanted to throw it out there, get it up and running. But yeah, appreciate you guys joining me once again. Lots to cover off on this episode, so I'm going to get right into it. I'm excited, man. Playoffs are going on. Been some really fun basketball. Ups and downs of teams and the battles and the strategies and scheming. It's crazy. But let me do this. Let me recap the first round before I go on to round two. I said it last episode, talking about people who, you know, who I think are pretty much done winning championships. I talked about the fact that Steph Curry is probably done winning a championship as the number one. LeBron is done winning a championship as the number one. KD is done winning a championship as the number one. But I'm going to say this, man. Joel Embiid hasn't won a championship yet. And I'm going to say this right now. Joel Embiid is not going to win a championship as the number one option. Whether it's because of his health, his knee is never going to be stable, or just because of his attitude, his want to, his ability to lead and to galvanize, and all those things I talked about KD in the last episode, where I was like, yo, KD needs somebody like Draymond to help him push dudes and to help him motivate dudes and even motivate himself at times. Joel Embiid needs the same thing, and I don't know if he's ever going to get that. Because he intrinsically is not the type of guy to put the team on his shoulder when things are down. He's not the type of guy to put the team on his shoulder and, like, to do things. Like, in that series against the Knicks, it was almost always Tyrese Maxey coming through in the clutch in the biggest of moments. Yeah, I know his knee is hurting. And like I said, that's probably going to be a problem throughout the rest of his career. But for whatever reason, Joel Embiid is just not able in the playoffs to raise his game. Whereas the Joker in the playoffs, the Joker goes to another level. Joel Embiid is just not able to get there. He's not able to overcome the amped up defense that there is. Teams designing, having time to game plan for him. He's not able to overcome that and to raise his team above that. So several times against the Knicks, it was in the biggest of moments, it was Tyrese Maxey pulling the team through. Big bucket after big bucket, and Joel was sitting there turning the ball over. So because of that, I don't know if Joel Embiid is ever going to win a championship. Y'all going to have to forgive me on that one. I know it sounds premature. I know it sounds like I'm trying to get off a hot take. But some guys, you can just tell ahead of time that they're not the guy to lead a team as the number one option to a championship. He has championship-level game, meaning Joel Embiid is, when he's healthy and he's in tune, he is the best player in the game. He's the most unstoppable force in the game today. But when the playoff comes, for whatever reason, whether it's wear and tear from the regular season, his body can't hold up, his knees can't hold up, but for whatever reason, when the playoffs come, he's just not there. We watched it last year with James Harden, right? When the Celtics get going in the Game 7, instead of him, you know, hey, man, we're not losing to these Celtics. Slump shoulders, him and James Harden both go out. And this year, they were ready to go out way before they did against the Knicks. But Maxey pulled him through. So he just doesn't have the qualities that you look for in the 1A guy, the 1A personality, not only in game, but in personality to pull your team through in tough moments, to overcome game planning and scheming that happens during a seven-game series, to overcome maybe you do have a slight injury, to overcome that. I just don't see it, man. Again, I love the guy's game. I called him the best player in the world, even though everybody was saying it was Joker. And for whatever reason, when the chips are down, you cannot count on the process. And that's unfortunate because his game is all-time. But he may not go down as an all-time guy because he just doesn't have that. He doesn't have that dog in him. By the way, the word dog is probably going to be repeated quite a few times on this episode. All right. He just doesn't have that. Y'all know what I'm talking about. He just doesn't have it. What you look for in a leader to win four series to win an NBA championship. Nick Nurse was supposed to help solve the problem from Doc Rivers. I told y'all not to be blaming Doc Rivers. I told y'all some cats just aren't championship level guys. They may have the game, but they don't have what it takes to win a championship. So stop blaming Doc Rivers for all his shortcomings. It wasn't Doc's fault that the process wasn't living up to his capabilities or doesn't live up to his capabilities in the playoffs. So download this, save this, bookmark it, whatever you want to do. When he wins one, y'all could throw it back in my face, but I'm willing to go out on a limb that as a number one option, the process ain't it, man. And that is unfortunate. All right, moving on. The Clippers are just a bad situation, bro. All right, forgive me. I tried to warn y'all early in the year. I was like, this thing ain't going to work. All right, Kawhi is always hurt. And James Harden is not a guy who can be trusted in the playoffs. Neither is Paul George. Russ, at this time of his career, is like one-dimensional. He can only get you buckets in the paint. He's not used. You have Russell Westbrook sitting out there at the three-point line. The other team is like, yes, pass him the ball. Let him shoot that corner three. Other teams want Russell Westbrook shooting that corner three. So if you're T. Lou, why are you running an offense where Russell Westbrook is sitting at the corner three? That's what the other team wants. You're never going to win a game. You're never going to win a series with Russell Westbrook jacking up corner three. So why is that the game plan? Ever. If he ain't at the top with the ball starting the pick and roll, at this point in his career, unfortunately, Russ might be cooked. Unfortunate to say. Hall of Fame Russ might be cooked. But I knew that team. I knew the Clippers team was done. They're old. They're always injured, seemingly, especially Kawhi this year. PG managed to stay healthy most of the year. Kawhi was actually healthy most of the year until late in the season. But they're old, they're injured, a bunch of ISO players who just didn't really gel, and I knew they weren't going to gel because they're all ISO players. Ain't none of these cats moving off ball. Sometimes you'll get Russ making a backdoor cut. But it's just not a good squad, man. It's not a good squad. I know people want to call it the big three, and not really. They don't have any real leaders on that team, man. Russ probably could be, but at the stage of his career, not anymore. Nobody's really listening to Russ right now, are they? And then come to find out, you know, I applauded Russ early in the year when he went to the bench because at first I was like, ain't no way it's going to work with all of them in the starting lineup. And then Russ went to the bench, and I was like, okay, good for him. You know, good looking out. But then come to find out, Russ didn't volunteer to go to the bench. According to these reports, he didn't want to go. Russ didn't want to go to the bench. Who does? So the chemistry just isn't there. They got names. The Clippers have names, but they don't have a squad. They have names. Even healthy, I don't know if that team does much because they don't have any chemistry. They don't gel, and you can see it on the court. Your turn, my turn. And then when you compound that with injuries, when you compound that with dudes who you just can't count on in the playoffs, Like, I made the prediction that the Mavs would beat them because even though he didn't have a great series, I just trusted Luka more. I trusted Luka more than Harden. I trusted Luka more than PG. So even though Luka didn't have the greatest series, the prophecy still came true. Like, you can't trust Harden and PG in the playoffs. You just can't. They've proven it historically. For whatever reason, when the playoffs come, when things get tight, those guys, you're not going to find them, man. They're going to come up missing, unfortunately. So the Clippers are in a tough spot. So, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. They might have to blow it up. I know they're going to a new stadium, so they want to sell tickets. They're not going to blow it up. They can't really blow it up because they have to sell tickets. And those guys are going to sell tickets. The promise of them being healthy. But Clippers fan, if you fall for the promise of these guys being healthy and making deep playoff runs, if that's going to be your reason for selling out this new arena, I got a couple of bridges to sell you. I got some oceanfront property in Ohio to sell you. If you think this Clippers team is going to do anything in the playoffs, even if they're healthy, and they're never going to be healthy. That's just the way it is. They're just not a squad. They're not a team. No chemistry. Four ISO cats and a couple role players. Not going to work. Sorry. All right, let's keep going. The Suns, I talked about them. I talked about the fact that KD got his behind swept and he's done winning championships. They got Bud. I don't know if that's going to make much of a difference, all right? I don't know if there is anything right now you can do with the current Phoenix Suns squad. Kind of like the same thing as the Clippers. You got three guys who play the same role. KD, Book, and Beal are essentially the same players. Beal is a lesser version of Book, and Book is a lesser version of KD. You don't have much depth. Nurkic is like your really only true big man. You still need a PG, I think. You need a point guard. So what are they going to do? What is Bud supposed to do? Bud's thing, right, was defense. That's what made Milwaukee so good and what made them so bad this year is that Bud was like a really good coach when it comes to defense. And I don't know if the Suns have what it takes to play any kind of defense, really, to stop people. Because Vogel is a defensive coach. And Vogel couldn't get it across to them to play defense, to lock people up. They don't have the personnel. They don't have the desire to lock people up like that. Like when you're watching the T-Wolves, like the Suns ain't going to do that. They don't have the personnel to do that. So Bud's thing is we're going to lock you up and we're going to force you to the perimeter. We're going to force you to the paint to drive and take tough layups. Is that going to happen? I don't know. I don't think they have the personnel in Phoenix. So I don't see Bud winning. I don't see him being able to corral those personalities. Like, if you're not able to win consistently with Giannis or enough, I guess some people didn't feel like he won enough. If you're not really able to win enough with Giannis and Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton, guys, you know, who are, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm hating on the Phoenix Suns dudes, but guys, you know, whose personalities are more coachable? I don't know if Phoenix's guys are coachable like that. So they'll win games in the regular season because they're talented, but I don't see it happening with the Phoenix Suns, man. No matter who's the coach, I don't think that core can win a championship. You got to break it up, sorry. Break it up. Too many repetitive parts on that team. You need more complementary pieces. Speaking of complementary pieces, the Lakers, I talked about them when they got eliminated. And, of course, the coach get blamed, so Darvin Ham gets fired. The coach is always going to get blamed with the Lakers, no matter what happens. When you do well, it's going to be LeBron. LeBron did this. His legacy is this. It's that. When you don't, the coach gets blamed. So now you hear about Darvin Ham, you know, Bron and AD, you know, there's talks about them not liking Darvin Ham this whole time, even though last year they went to the conference championship. Like, Darvin Ham stood no chance. And no coach, unless you're homeboys with LeBron, no coach is going to have a fair chance with the Lakers. All right? Forget about it. No matter what your resume is, no matter what your name is, unless you're like Coach Popovich, If you don't have like those rings to your name, you're not going to have any kind of respect on that team, man. Because LeBron is like this player coach. And when he wins, he gets the credit. When he loses, you get the blame. So Darvin Ham said no chance. Of course he was going to be fired. Duh. What? He had no chance. And Frank Vogel, after winning a championship, of course he gets fired. Because anytime things go bad with the Lakers, they're not going to look at the construct of the team. They're not going to say, hey, man, LeBron, maybe you should not be on ball all the time. Maybe AD in the clutch needs to step up more. If he wants to, that's another conversation. Maybe we need to change this. Maybe we need to make some changes to how we do things. Maybe, LeBron, you need to defend. We're watching that Denver series, LeBron. We watch how you didn't, how you defended, or really how you didn't defend. We watch how you got backdoor. We watch how you lost the guy you were guarding in Aaron Gordon. We watched that. But the coach can't say that. No coach can come into the Lakers situation and say, hey, Bron, you got to step up. Yeah, you're still getting a lot of points, and people are going to use your age as an excuse when you're doing well. Oh, look at the 39-year-old doing all these things. When you're not doing well, oh, he's 39. So we know all the excuses are made for LeBron James. That's fine. But as a coach, I'm not taking that job. I don't give a damn because you have no chance. I mean, if you sign a 5-year contract, if you get fired, you're going to get paid regardless. So that might be the one benefit of being a Lakers coach. But there is no way right now I'm going to advise somebody to go take the Lakers job because the coach is always going to be blamed no matter how good you really are. Because LeBron's going to get the credit and you're going to get the blame when things go bad. That's just facts. That's just the way it is. So I'm not going to sit here and say Darvin Ham is like Phil Jackson or nothing like that. But damn it, like y'all were just in the Western Conference Finals last year, and you can't tell me that that team, that Lakers team, is so well put together that they're a championship squad. I said it earlier in the year, like the Lakers are overrated big time, just like the Dallas Cowboys. They get all the coverage, but they're overrated big time. So you assume that that team is championship material when they're really not. You assume that Austin Reeves should be like a third guy when he's really not. You assume all these things because it's the Lakers when really they're not. They're not that good of pieces. So yeah, I wouldn't want to coach the Lakers. Sorry. They're not a good situation. They're as bad. The Lakers are just as bad of a situation as the Phoenix Suns and the Clippers. Old dudes stuck in their ways, and you're trying to coach them and motivate them to go win a championship against these young dogs who are coming up after them. Teams who know how to execute. Teams who are willing to go all out and defend. Teams who are willing to take coaching. So you're asking these guys, these old guys who are stuck in the ways, who've been doing things their way for so long and have had success, to now change everything about the way they do. You asking LeBron to play off ball to accept maybe to go stand in a corner like Russell Westbrook was asked to do. That ain't going to happen. No coach is going to have the power to tell Bron, hey, man, go chill in the corner, corner three, 3-and-D. That's going to be our path to success. It ain't happening. And since that ain't happening, the Lakers ain't winning nothing either. Bookmark that. So that was round one, what I wanted to catch up on. Round two. Knicks Pacers have been an interesting series. Honestly, the Pacers are lucky. If the Knicks were healthy, the Knicks would have won that series, all right? I think pretty easily, actually. But now it's a dogfight. The Pacers are right back in it. It's 2-2. Knicks have all types of injuries. I don't know if they can overcome that. We'll see. I love the way they play. Here's what I want to do. I do want to say, though. I want to apologize for Jalen Brunson. I apologize, my guy. I doubted you as a number one option. Jalen Brunson is legit. People call him a foul merchant, a foul baiter, whatever you want to call Jalen Brunson. Nah, man. The boy is legit. His game is legit. He's not athletic. He doesn't need to be. He plays at his own pace. You can't speed him up. He has a post game. Like, footwork is on point. He has some wiggle. He like I said, his pace. Like, he knows how to control the pace. He knows how to set you up with his head fakes and his herky-jerky style. He keeps you off balance. You don't know when he's going up, when he's faking, when he's going, when he's stopping. You don't know. And he's tough as hell. He's playing through injuries. His hand, wrist, his foot. Like, I apologize, Jalen Brunson. You are like that, bro. You deserve all the props. Jalen Brunson is the king of New York, man. For real. Yeah, he needs some help, obviously. His team is hurt. I don't know if Julius Randle is a guy you can count on in the playoffs. But as a number one option, Jalen Brunson is legit, man. He is that guy. He is to be respected. So I want to apologize to Jalen for doubting you and thinking you were just a foul merchant and getting the benefit of the call all the time. No, yeah, he knows how to manipulate the whistle, the refs. No doubt. But he sets teams up. He sets dudes up, but he's smart with it. He's not just, well, I'm going to run into you type of guy. He gets you the head fake. He gets you the jump. And then, well, once you leave your feet, that's it. That's your fault. And so whatever happens after that, that's your fault. So you got to be poised on defense. It's your job, not his job. So a team with OG Anunoby missing, Mitchell Robinson missing, and Bogdanovich missing, and Julius Randle missing, like, they're gritty, they're tough, they're typical Tom Thibodeau team. You know, I love Tibbs, but I don't know if they can beat the Pacers with all these injuries. But still in all, shout out to Jalen Brunson for being that guy, man. Truly, truly an elite, elite league guard in the association. Boston Cavs. What? There's nothing else I can say, man. The Boston Celtics are the Boston Celtics, all right? You don't know who you're going to get. They're always going to lose a game to a team they shouldn't lose to. You don't know what you're going to get, all right? They're lucky, like I said last time, they're lucky everybody's hurt or else they would have gotten kicked out early. But they're probably going to stroll, you know, to the finals, right? Because everybody else is hurt. But damn it, man. Watching them against the Cavs is like, the Cavs shouldn't be nowhere close to the Celtics. Every game should be a blowout. Even with Porzingis missing. But you can't trust the Celtics to be consistent, to be focused consistently every game. Just like, you know, they lost to the Cavs. Just like in the previous series, they lost to the Heat for no damn reason. In previous years, it's always something with them. They just don't have whatever it is. They don't have whatever it is. They don't have it as a team. To just go out there, okay, these cats can't play with us. Bang, 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 bang. Four straight y'all out. So it's frustrating to watch. OKC and Mavs. What's happening here is what I think usually happens in the playoffs, especially when teams really make it for the first time. And it's really the first time for this core group of Thunder players is they're just too young. And they're still trying to figure out what the playoffs is about, what the intensity is about. They struggle on a defensive end, like they're with their size, their lack of size. And honestly, PJ Washington for the Mavs is going off like no one expected. I mean, we knew he was good, but this guy is going bananas. And he can't be stopped. So while Luka is still not going crazy every game, Kyrie's not going crazy every game, the Mavs just have a better team right now. And when things get tight, they are able to execute better. They look more experienced. So while OKC had the best record in the league, in the Western Conference, they look young. They really do. I like them. I think they got a bright future, but they look young. And they're going to need some size. Chet Holmgren is tall, but he's skinny. So he gets bodied. And outside of that, they don't really have any muscle. So you see Dallas Mavericks grabbing offensive rebound after offensive rebound after offensive rebound. They're getting bodied. So they need that. They need more size. So that's what's happening. I think it's more size for the Mavs on the interior, more girth, and just more experience. I think that's what's winning, gonna win the Mavs this series. But we'll see though. Interesting games. Yes, we've had less interesting games, but for the most part, interesting basketball being played there. But what is the top of the top series? What has been the top of the top series and we knew would be the top of the top series is the Nuggets and the Timberwolves, man. That series has been amazing. Yes, game three was a blowout. But, man, this is top-notch basketball. You are watching an ace on one side and ace on the other side, and you can't ask for much more than that. I can imagine this Nuggets-Wolves series is what it would have looked like if Hakeem and Jordan played in the same conference or ever met up in the finals. Like, this is differing style. This is what the NBA should be about, right? Instead of everybody in the NBA, every team trying to copy the Golden State Warriors and just jack up a bunch of threes, this is what the NBA should be about, contrasting styles. The Nuggets have a big man who's unstoppable. The Wolves have a wing player who's just as unstoppable. So who wins? That's when the chess comes into play. Whose role players are going to step up? And so far, the role players have switched up. First two games, the T-Wolves role players were legit. They D'd him up. They made shots. Nikhil Alexander Walker couldn't miss a shot. Jalen McDaniels was balling. Cat was balling. And then somehow, some way, games three and four in Minnesota, things flip. Now Aaron Gordon can't miss a shot to save his life. What the hell is going on, AG? And of course, Murray is making his buckets. He's back to making buckets. So it's been crazy to watch, man. But the biggest changes have been to me in this series is the fact that the whistle, the refereeing that went on in the first two games where the Timberwolves essentially got to play real defense. They got to D them boys up. I guess people complain and the league, you know, softened up. So now they're not able to D them up no more. The defensive intensity that was there the first two games is not there anymore. So if the Wolves are going to win, they're going to have to recapture that defensive intensity to be able to stop the Nuggets. Because playing the way they are right now, you're watching the ball pressure is not the same. Like Jamal Murray's able to come off his screens and once he gets into that, gets downhill and that pick and roll with Joker, it's a wrap. It's a wrap, man. It's a wrap. Also, the Nuggets have what seems to be more chemistry as a team, right? Joker gets the ball in the paint. He's doing his thing. Cats are moving. Joker does his turnaround, and as he's turning around, Aaron Gordon is cutting, he's throwing a lob, right? They have movements off the ball. They have different actions the Denver Nuggets do. The Wolves don't really have much action outside of when the Ant-Man gets the ball. It's just, let's watch the Ant-Man get busy. And he's been great at it, but you don't see much cutting back doors. You don't see much of that. So that's probably what's limiting them also in this series is that Denver is able to focus on it. And Denver really has a lot of guys right now who they're giving a shot to. They're like, we're going to let Jalen McDaniels shoot. If he makes them, he makes them. And T-Wolves kind of had that same strategy. We're going to let Aaron Gordon shoot, but Aaron Gordon is not making them. So now what? Like if Aaron Gordon is making all these shots, the T-Wolves aren't going to win another game because their whole strategy was we're going to stop the Joker and Jamal Murray. And we're going to let Aaron Gordon shoot. But if AG is going to be making all these shots, and he's, like, drilling them, you're not beating the Denver Nuggets. No one is. No one's going to beat the Nuggets if AG's shooting like that. But the Wolves, on the other hand, the Nuggets are like, we'll let Jalen McDaniels shoot. Nikhil Alexander Walker was hot first two games. Not anymore. We'll let Nikhil Alexander Walker shoot. Also, Cat has gone missing. So Cat is throwing the game. Rudy Gobert, for some reason, can't stop the Joker, defensive player of the year, but can't stop the Joker. So things are unraveling for the Timberwolves. So it's like Anthony Edwards, and who's going to help him? Who's going to step up? Because right now the Joker has more help than the Ant-Man. So we'll see how the rest of the series plays out, but it just seems like Denver's team is just, again, another team that's young in the Timberwolves. Denver looks experienced. It looked like the champs. And if you're going to beat the champs, you have to beat the champs. So the Wolves are going to have to go snatch that thing. They're going to have to play their best games ever to go beat the Nuggets. On that note, though, talking about the Joker and Ant, Joker won his MVP, third and fourth years. I'm not mad that the Joker won the MVP, all right? I know people on social media think you're mad, you're a hater. I'm not mad that the Joker won the MVP. It just sucks that the narrative just keeps changing to keep giving Joker the MVP. That's what sucks. It's not that he wasn't great. It's not that he's not deserving. He shouldn't be in the conversation. It's just that every time he wins it, there has been a narrative change so he can win it. And people seem to be opposed to changing the narrative for someone else to win it. So it's not that he's not great. It's not that Joker's not the best player in the league. Of course, he's the best player in the league. But the best player in the league doesn't always win the MVP. So it's not being a hater to say, hey, man, you changed the narrative for everyone else except for the Joker. Like in previous years, like LeBron should have won a million MVPs. So should have Jordan. And Steve Nash got two MVPs. And Kobe and Shaq's prime. How does that happen? Because there's always a narrative written for other people. So the narrative is always changing to fit the Joker's case. Well, he's carrying the team without Murray. Well, he has the best record. Well, this. Well, that. Now it's his analytics. And I'm going to say this, man. I'm going to say this right now. The Joker is going to be the MVP in 2024, 2025. Because his average is going to be the same. He's going to average his 26, 27. He's going to have his 11 boards, nine assists. 26, 11, and 9. Pretty much the same as this year. His analytics are going to be outstanding because he's an analytics god. His team's going to be great. Probably the number one seed again. So he's going to look the exact same as he does this year. Joker is going to look the same next year. Meanwhile, you're going to ask Shea to look even better than he did this year, which is almost impossible. Get his team to the number one seed to put up even better stats. How? You're going to ask Luka to be even better than he was this year with his incredible stat line. How? How does Luka play better than this year? That's unfair expectations. So if Luka puts up the same numbers as this year, and Shea puts up the same numbers as this year, and Joker puts up the same numbers as this year, who wins MVP? If you're willing to give it to the Joker this year, then you might as well give it to him next year because he's going to put up the same numbers, and Shea and Luka are going to be able to put up the same numbers because it's impossible to ask them to do even more than what they're doing right now. Like, is Luka going to have to average 45 points to win an MVP? Is Shea going to have to average 40 points to win an MVP while also playing great defense? It's impossible. And leading his team to another number one seed. So everything's going to stay the same as they are next year because those guys can't add another 5 points to their stat line to make up the analytical gap that seems to put Joker over the edge every time. He's an analytical god. So as a result, Joker's going to put up the same stat line next year, and he's going to win again. So if next year you're willing to give somebody else the MVP, then why didn't you give it to him this year? Huh? Think about that. Think about that, y'all. How is Luka, how is Shea going to overcome the statistical stats, the crazy stats that the Joker puts up? How? They can't. You can't ask for much more. So that's what makes this whole thing so crazy is you're asking these guys to do above and beyond. But for Joker, you keep switching the narrative. Best player, best team gets it sometimes. best statistical season gets it sometimes. No, not for the Joker. It's whatever narrative fits to him. We're going to make the Joker get it. So next year, he should win it. 24-25 MVP, I present to you Nikola Jokic. Because there's no way Luka does anything greater than what he did this year, which was special. How does Shai do better than this year? Like, what is it going to take for him to win the MVP? Nothing. He can't do much more. It's not fair to ask him to do much more. And as a result, if that's the case, if they all end up having the same seasons, then the Joker is going to be the MVP. And that's that. And he might as well just give it to him in 25-26 too. Because he's going to be putting up the same stats, same analytics, same everything. His team's going to be great. And we're going to be back in this, having the same conversation next year. We're going to be having the same conversation. What is it going to take for somebody else to win an MVP? There's not going to be an answer besides, well, his analytics say so. That's going to be your answer. Anyway, I'm off that. Actually, I'm not. I do want to say this before I leave this. As I post things on social media about the Joker, I always talk about how I think he's great, how I love his game. He's a throwback guy. Like, I love this guy. I can say I love the Joker till I'm blue in the face. Black folks don't get blue. But I can say I love Joker till I'm blue in the face. But somebody is going to tell me I'm a hater as soon as I say I don't think he should be the MVP. Or somebody is going to call me a hater as soon as I say, hey, we're premature in saying the Joker is better than Shaq right now. Oh, the Joker's top 10 player all time. Like, we're premature in saying that, but I can't say that. Even when I say Joker's the best in the game, I can't say that. Even if I say I love the guy's style, I can't say that. I'm a hater. And for that, Nikola Jokic is becoming LeBron James. LeBron James, shake hands with Nikola Jokic. Same guy. LeBron fans, LeBron stands, you can't say anything negative. You can't critique LeBron at all. So you can call LeBron one of the best of all times. He's in a GOAT conversation. But as soon as you don't have him as the number one player ever, you're a hater. You can say all these great things about LeBron James, one of the best athletes ever in any sport. You can love this guy's game on the court, off the court. You can say anything positive about LeBron James. As soon as you say, hey, man, his jump shot has been was suspect for most of his career. He drives and he gets a lot of points off of dunks and layups. Like, if you ever try to tell the truth on LeBron, his fans are going to call you a hater. So Jokic fans and LeBron fans are like the same thing now. And it's probably true for all fan bases, right? You can't tell somebody their favorite player can't do something. Like, you have to tell people their favorite player is the best ever of all time. So you can't tell the truth that the Joker doesn't play any defense. Don't come to me about his defensive rating, right? We watch the games. Nobody cares about him when they're driving to the paint. The only time he does anything in the paint is when dudes are hesitant, right? Because the defense has collapsed. AG is back there. Dudes are hesitant. They don't know if they should shoot it or pass it. But if dudes like Anthony Edwards makes up his mind to go to the paint, the Joker is not going to be there to deter him at all. So it's okay to say, hey, Joker, you are great, the best in the league, but you're kind of one-dimensional, bro. Your defense is lacking, but you can't say that or else you're a hater. So no matter how you feel about the Joker, how great you say he is, his fans want you to only tell the positive side. You can't say nothing negative. You can't say he's not a great defender. He doesn't move his feet. He looks like he's running in sand on defense. You can't say that, even though we're watching the games. You can't say, hey, man, he may be a contender for the MVP, but he doesn't have to win the MVP every year. You don't have to change the storyline, the narrative every year to give it to the Joker. You can't say that. So, yeah, Joker, Nikola Jokic fans, meet LeBron fans. You guys are the exact same. Nobody can say anything negative about the Joker without getting backlash and being called a hater. Like, they're calling Shaq a hater. Like, Shaq, 5 minutes before the Jokic MVP interview, says, this guy's the best. He even tells him to his face, I think you're the best player in the world. I love your game. You know how much I love you, blah, blah, blah. But I just thought, you know, SGA, you know, I'm going to tell you man to man. I'm not going to, you know, tell you one thing in your face and, you know, talk behind your back. I'm going to tell you man to man, hey, you know, I think SGA should have won the MVP, you know, because of the season he had, his team had, X, Y, Z, blah, blah, blah. Oh, Shaq is a hater. Shaq thinks Jokic is coming for his position. No, he doesn't. If Shaq wants to be a hater, then he would talk about him like he does Dwight Howard, which he doesn't. Shaq ain't hating on that man. He just feels like somebody else should have won MVP, and it's okay. If you could disagree, it's okay for you to disagree, but you ain't, not everybody's a hater just because they're pointing out something different. They have a different point of view. Joker is great, the best in the league, but it's okay to say, hey, man, there's some weak spots in your game, and we don't think you probably should have won the MVP this year. Agree to disagree. But ain't nobody a hater. Please. Please. Anyway, I'm done with that. But here's what I really, really wanted to talk about today, all right? This is what I've been waiting to talk about. I'm on this thing, man. Anthony Edwards is the Messiah for NBA basketball. Anthony Edwards is the savior of American basketball specifically. I talked last time about the Denver Nuggets being, you know, saving the NBA basketball. Anthony Edwards is the savior. He is the Messiah of American basketball. He is next. Actually, he's got right now. And it's crazy watching it in real time. Like, dude, the media is just not coming around to, like, how good this guy is and his personality. Right? And I feel like I'm late, even though earlier in the season I talked about this guy being Jordan's grandson and Kobe's son. But man, I'm loving watching this guy. He is a true two-way player, offense, defense. He comes at you like he is the American basketball. He is what Jordan set as a template, what Kobe took over, what T-Mac did, like LeBron coming through. Like, he is that guy. We've been waiting for Anthony Edwards' type. We thought it would be somebody like Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum could have been Anthony Edwards, but Jason Tatum doesn't have that motor. He's great. He has a skill. Jason Tatum probably right now is more skillful than Anthony Edwards. Jason Tatum has the shot, mid-range, deep shot, handles. He can D up. Jason Tatum has it all. He doesn't have the athleticism of Anthony Edwards, but he has the complete package otherwise. But he also lacks the motor, which is why Anthony Edwards seems to have surpassed him in these conversations, and he's now become the face of the league. Because Anthony Edwards reminds us, especially us older folks, of what it was like playing on a playground. It was like, I'm the best, my team is the best, I'm better than you, and I can prove it. That's Anthony Edwards. He's almost cocky, he's confident, like, nobody can stop me game. That's the playground style that we grew up with. So he's authentic, he's himself. Like, I don't think there's been a more authentic player in the league, at least the ones who are the face of the league, since, like, Allen Iverson. It seemed like the other cats, you know, were more presidential and, you know, saying the right things. Like, Anthony Edwards is true to ATL. He's an Atlanta boy through and through, and his press conferences, the way he interacts with people on the court, like, he's authentic. But he's also saving American basketball. He's saving American basketball because American basketball, we were kind of American, and I've said it before in podcasts, the American style of basketball was in your face. It was, I'm better than you. It was physical. It was skillful. It was artful, artistic. The game was all of those things. American NBA basketball was all those things combined. But slowly but surely, those things started being taken away. The physicality started being taken away. Dudes were flopping now. Flopping used to be reserved to the Europeans. But we have American players flopping now. Anthony Edwards ain't with that flopping stuff. Dude just want to take step back threes now. Anthony Edwards, he'll take threes, but he'll also drive and yam on you. Now, he is in your face. He has the bravado, the moxie. He's not switching like everybody's switching. Like, the game is designed to make dudes essentially fall back now. And especially in American, you know, American dudes coming up, like, they're also used to just being on super teams. Nobody is used to being the alpha of the alpha anymore. This dude, Anthony Edwards, is the alpha of the alpha. And I can't wait to watch him on the Olympic team to see what happens. But he doesn't mind being the alpha. He doesn't mind being the top dog. The American system has produced a bunch of cats who are talented, but who, for whatever reason, are unable to take that top dog leap and to be that guy. A.E., Anthony Edwards, doesn't mind being that guy. So I don't know if he played on, I'm sure he played on stacked AAU teams, right? But for whatever reason, he's overcome that. He's overcome that. So, hey, man, look, when we're down, when we need something, let me go get that bucket. Let me guard this guy. I don't mind guarding this guy. I'm better than you, and I can prove it. For those of you who remember that EA Sports commercial, I'm better than you, and I can prove it. So he's just the next up in the two-way stars, all right? He's Wade in 06, D. Wade in 06, and Kobe. Like, guys who just aren't going to let their team lose. Like, yeah, they might take the L. I'm not saying he's going to win every series and win every championship. They might take an L. But you're not going to look at them like some of these other guys. You're not going to look at Anthony Edwards and say, oh, man, he went out like a punk. Nah, AE ain't going out like that. So he's putting American basketball back on the map. He is the two-way guy that so many of these guys have the talent to be, but they just don't have it in them to be. He's like, I don't care what y'all do. I'm taking my team to the top. Y'all gonna have to knock me off. But I ain't stopping. I'm gonna keep coming. I ain't stopping. And that's what the rest of the world has not cloned yet. The rest of the world has great offensive players. Luka's great offensively. Jokic is great. Heck, Giannis is an athlete. But the combination of athleticism, of bravado, of style, with the ball handling, artistic, a dog, defensive intensity, like ability to shoot and go to the hole. Like, Anthony Edwards is the complete package. And I want to apologize, by the way, for saying it was going to take you 3 years to be the best player in the league. It might be as early as next year where AE takes that crown. But he is bringing American basketball back. At least he's holding the Europeans at bay for at least a few more years. Because he is what we've been waiting on. Anthony Edwards is the Messiah for American basketball that we've been waiting on. Jason Tatum could have been that guy. But he doesn't have that. His personality just ain't like that. He has the game, but his personality ain't. That F.U. personality. Anthony Edwards has that F.U. personality. I'm coming at you, bro, and you got to stop me. That's that playground style we grew up on that a lot of cats are missing nowadays. They're just great hoopers. But if you're going to win in the playoffs, you got to have that 06 D. Wade, like, I'm winning this thing. I don't care what y'all do. That Kobe, I'm taking this thing over. I don't give a damn what y'all do. I don't even hear what y'all talking about. That's what Anthony Edwards has. And that's why he deserves to be the face of the league. Because he's willing to be himself. And he's willing to do whatever it takes to win a basketball game. On that note, LeBron James can now retire. Thank you, LeBron. We appreciate you. And if you want to play with Bronny, Bronny's going to get drafted. We know that, right? Bronny's going to get drafted. So Lakers, please draft Bronny so LeBron can play one game with Bronny and then retire. All right? But LeBron can retire, safely retire now. We found the next guy. We want all the attention on Anthony Edwards. We don't want to be talking about the Lakers when they've been sent home already, right? When they've been swept or been gentlemen swept. We don't want to be talking about the Lakers no more because of LeBron. We know what they are, all right? We want a new story, man. Please, Bron, you're holding the media hostage. I know it's not your fault. You're holding the media hostage. Go ahead and retire, man. Next year, play the first game with Bronny. Step on the court. Boom, boom. You know, get your points. Let Bronny get his points. And then say peace. Peace out, y'all. I'm out. Deuces. Deuces, man. Because it's Anthony Edwards' time, man. Let him take the mic. And for those who don't think, speaking of Mike, those who don't think Anthony Edwards looks like Jordan, you're crazy. When you look at the way Anthony Edwards jumps and he leaps, I'm watching this guy's left hand finishes. That is Michael Jordan's left hand through and through. Like, when you watch him jump and go to the cup, like, that is Michael Jordan's finishing, bro. The way he's working in the post, and it's not as polished as Jordan yet, but that's Michael Jordan, y'all. People want to say, well, he reminds them of Dwayne Wade. Nah, man. Like, you got to watch this thing. It's like he is so elegant when he jumps. When he goes to finish, y'all have to see it, man. If I could find the clip, I'll post it. If not, y'all just look for it, man. Like, Michael Jordan's finishing in the left hand in the paint, it looks just like Anthony Edwards, bro. It's like, damn. Damn. We're not saying he's Jordan. We're not comparing his career to Jordan. We're not saying he's going to be Michael Jordan when it's all said and done with six rings. That's unfair expectations, right? We're not putting Jordan expectations on Anthony Edwards. We're just saying his style is like Michael Jordan, all right? Y'all people calm down. His style reminds us of Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. The way he glides up the court, it reminds us of Michael Jordan. We're not saying this guy's going to win six chips or five or four. None of that. No. It's unfair to say that. And Ant, even being himself, as he always is, he's like, don't compare to Michael Jordan because I have a three ball. He's always himself no matter what. Yo, other cats would have been like, ooh, it's an honor to be compared to Michael Jordan. Ant's like, no, don't compare to, you know, don't compare me to Michael Jordan. I have a three ball. That's so funny. Nah, but really, though, it's true. He has a three ball. But his style, though, is Michael Jordan. I can't unsee that, man. The way he glides up the court when he elevates is like a rocket taking off. Dude, that's young Mike right there, man. I'm sorry, man. But yeah, shout out to Anthony Edwards. You are now the face of the league on Good Morning America. Like, I'm glad the rest of the league is catching up. You're going to have some haters, though. Once you become the face of the league, you're going to have some haters, but I'll be there to support, bro. As long as you don't switch up and go play for a super team, I'll be there to support the Ant-Man. But yeah, man, Anthony Edwards is saving American basketball. He is the promised Messiah, and he is here. Shout out to AE. All right, a couple of things I'm going to get up out of here. JJ Redick, man, smart cat. He has his podcast. He has a podcast with LeBron. And he be saying stuff, I'm like, yo, this cat is really caping for LeBron James. I can't believe that, bro. He's a LeBron simp, a stan. He said recently that Michael Jordan played in the expansion era. Really? Michael Jordan played in the expansion era? The NBA added six teams during Michael Jordan's time in the league. Six. Okay, cool. Well, LeBron James plays in the tanking era. LeBron James plays in the analytics era where dudes forget how to play basketball and they're all robots just taking three-pointers. LeBron James plays in the load management era where dudes, instead of playing, are taking nights off. So you tell me what's worse, playing in an expansion era where the league is adding teams, and it's not like everybody who got added, all the teams were filled with dudes who were scrubs and who shouldn't be in the NBA. They had expansion drafts. So they were legit NBA players on these expansion teams. And the Magic, who was an expansion team, like, got Shaq and then got Penny, and immediately that franchise was a playoff contender and in the finals. So what are we talking about here, man? What are we talking about? So you're going to tell me the expansion era, adding teams, dudes who, you know, even if they weren't NBA level players, they were trying to win, is worse than playing in an area where teams, owners, GMs, coaches were trying to lose. You had teams like the Sixers intentionally not playing dudes, resting dudes, and having G League players playing in the league and trying to lose games. So that's not bad, but having expansion teams is bad. Playing in a league where four or five teams every year were trying to lose so they could get the number one pick. That's not bad, is it? That's not bad. But having expansion teams is bad. Playing in a league where dudes are now robots, they don't control themselves. It seems like somebody has a controller controlling them, where all they can take is three-pointers and layups now. Nobody wants to be diverse in their game anymore. You don't think the opening of the lane has allowed LeBron to get way more points than he probably would have ended up with? The less physicality, you don't think that's benefited LeBron, huh? You don't think so? So you think just playing in the expansion era is what makes Jordan the GOAT? Playing with teams willfully throwing games? The NBA never spoke about that, by the way. The NBA has never come out and says, hey, man, we know you're throwing games. Might as well be gambling. So teams throwing games is not bad. Teams load managing is not bad. But expansion era basketball is bad. Child, please. Get out of here, man. So no. Expansion era is not something to look down upon if you're going to praise LeBron for playing in the tanking era. No. LeBron having the paint wide booty open for him every single day, all day, every day, with no big men there to challenge him. No, that doesn't help his GOAT case at all, because Jordan played in the expansion era. Negative. Negative. The tanking era is worse than the expansion era, because the expansion era, dudes were actually trying to win. Dudes were trying to stay in the league. The tanking era, the teams were literally trying to lose intentionally. 5-6 teams every year trying to lose. If we weren't going to win the championship, the strategy for so long, since like 2014, the strategy was, if we're not going to win a championship, we're going to lose on purpose to try to get the number one pick, to try to get the process, to try to get Chet Holmgren, all of these guys. That was the strategy for so long. So that didn't benefit LeBron walking into Philadelphia, knowing that they weren't going to play anybody because they were trying to get Ben Simmons and then the process and then Markelle Fultz. That didn't benefit LeBron playing in the Eastern Conference? Child, please. Please. Y'all can miss me with that one. Expansion has nothing on literally throwing games to try to get a draft pick. Child, please. But I love the conversation, though. Give me something to talk about. All right, last thing. Austin Rivers made some waves because he talked about basketball players being better than football players. And I'm going to just get on this for a quick second, and I'm going to get up out of here, y'all. Football players are the greatest athletes in the world. Y'all can stop that. Football players are the greatest athletes in the world. I think I've mentioned this on this podcast. I attended the Florida State University. 1999, when I got there, I was on campus with dudes like Peter Warwick, Anquan Boldin on Florida State football team. And they used to come to the gym and hoop. And these guys were the best basketball players on campus, including the dudes who had scholarship to play basketball at Florida State. Peter Warwick was Mr. Basketball and Mr. Football in the state of Florida. Tremendous athlete. And if Peter Warwick wanted to play in the NBA, he probably could have played in the NBA. Till this day, Anquan Boldin, I had to play D up Anquan Boldin, and he D'd me up. Quan is like probably the strongest cat I've ever played on a basketball court. We were like 19, 20 years old at the time. Till this day, he's like one of the strongest cats I've ever played with on a basketball court. Football players are physical freaks, man. They can run. They can jump. They can catch. And they have to do all that while getting blasted. Yeah, basketball players are athletes, but are they running 4-3? So let's say you're running 4-3. Can you run the 4-3 in pads? Let's say you can run the 4-3 and you can run the 4-3 in pads. Can you run the 4-3 in pads while you're getting jammed? Another athlete just as good as you is intentionally jamming you, unlike basketball where they have to have their hands out. In football, they can jam you. So can you run a 4-3 in pads while getting jammed, while reading the coverage and not slowing down or knowing when to slow down and when to go? Can you run a 4-3 in pads while getting jammed, reading the coverage, while trying to avoid a freaking linebacker who's trying to take your head off? And if he's not trying to take your head off, then the safety's trying to take your head off. And you still have to make a catch in traffic while somebody is grabbing you. That is peak athletics. Basketball is great, but basketball is more skilled. For your life, you have to dribble to be great at basketball, right? To be a great basketball player, you have to know how to dribble, right? So dribbling takes time to master. Shooting takes time to master. So the skill of basketball is superior to most football positions, even though the skill of quarterback can't be replicated in basketball. So the skill of basketball can't be replicated. So that's why basketball players, some of them can become tight ends in the NFL, right? Because they're not blocking. They're not dealing with the physicality of the tight end position. They're not blocking. They're pass-catching tight ends. Gonzalez, Antonio Gates, Jimmy Graham, these boys. Because they're big, so they're bigger than defensive backs. And they got pretty good speed, so they're faster than linebackers. So they're a tough cover. So, yeah, shout out to those guys for being great at what they do. But football players, man, like the receivers, they have to do all of this stuff. They have to run fast while getting jammed, while looking like running the pattern and avoiding getting their head knocked off and still holding on to a football. So Calvin Johnson is like peak athlete. So just because there's not a lot of NFL players in the NBA doesn't mean they couldn't play in the NBA. Like, there are NFL players who could have played in the NBA. There are NFL players who could do what Patrick Beverley does. Like, I don't know if Sauce Gardner plays any basketball, but Sauce Gardner could do what Patrick Beverley does, which is essentially play defense and knock down a couple open shots a game. You trying to tell me there's not NFL players who could do that? They could. Not to throw Pat under the bus, but that's just the way it is. They could. So the NFL has a ton more positions, so it's easier for the tight end, you know, a pass-catching tight end to slide in because of those matchup problems. But they're not ultra-physical. They're not out there, you know, doing everything that's required on a football field. They're playing a specific position. Like, as a football player, you have to intentionally say, I'm going to hurt myself every play. 50, 60, 70 times a game, football players are literally doing things to hurt themselves, to put themselves in harm's way. Would NBA players be really willing to line up to do that? I don't know. And these guys are freak athletes. I'm telling you, man. Some of these guys I played with at Florida State, like, these guys were some of the best basketball players ever. Some of these linemen, they were huge. They had quick feet, and they could hoop. They weren't tall enough, like, 7 feet to go play in the NBA, so they were probably like 6'4", old linemen, 6'5". Big dudes with quick feet. So they weren't big enough, but, man, these guys could absolutely hoop, man. Peter Warwick could have played in the NBA if he wanted to. But he was a better football player. Great athlete, though. These guys are great athletes. So, yeah, I would never sleep on a football player, man. Football players, to me, pound for pound, are the best athletes in the world because they do all that they're doing while knowing they're going to get hurt 100% of the time and they're going to get their heads knocked off. And baseball players. Like, there's a reason why football players aren't baseball players. Because it takes skills to master swinging and hitting a 100-mile-per-hour fastball. It's not about being an athlete. It's about the skill. So there's not as many NFL players going to the NBA because they're just not as skillful, not because they're not better athletes. So to me, pound for pound, NFL players are the best athletes in the world. All right? Think about defensive backs having to cover, backpedal, flip their hips while somebody's running 4-3 at them. Think about that. I didn't even talk about that. Cornerbacks having to backpedal, flip their hips, jam somebody, like do all that while being scared to get beat over the top or the guy could stop on a dime and turn around and catch a first down. Like, they have to protect against all that with the guy coming 4-3 at them. You can't tell me that guy couldn't play in the NBA. You can't tell me Sauce Gardner couldn't play in the NBA if he plays basketball. You can't tell me that. They're superior athletes, bro. And all you got to do is make a couple shots a game to play like 3 and D. That's all you got to do now to be Pat Bev. Anyway, I'm off of that. Good conversation. I love this conversation, man. I've been thinking about this for a while, really, even before Austin Rivers says it. But I love it. Hey, but I appreciate y'all hanging out, man, once again. As always, I love it. Sports and the real shit. Mike, I'm going to catch you guys next time. Peace. I'm going straight to the top. Just put the sec on the clock. I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the